How do you escape from your pain? Real life starts now.
Welcome to Real Life with Evangelists Ann and Kathleen Lay, where people with real problems find answers in a real God.
Welcome to Real Life. I'm your host, Kathleen Lay, and joining me is my husband, Evangelist Ann Lay.
Later in the show, you'll hear from Millie Radosti, who harmed herself to deal with the pain of her past.
Thinking about escaping from your pain, I know that a lot of times we can try to resort to other things and look for things to cover the pain or to not deal with it. Maybe we spend time watching TV or eating food constantly and end up getting into bad habits. Or some people, they end up taking something to cope with pain. Maybe it's a drug and they get addicted to it and they weren't planning to go down that road, but now they've got more problems on their hands.
Yeah. You know, I think that's human nature, isn't it? To, you know, dull the pain, to get anesthetized, you know what I mean?
Right.
Like, just numb it. I don't want to feel it. And let's not deal with it. Let's run away from the pain. But is that the right answer? Because if you get into some type of bad habit, say even if it was drugs or things like that, it's actually going to make the problem much more difficult. And it's going to make it worse. It could increase that pain and cause a bigger problem. But the Bible talks about a little something different. In Romans chapter 8, verse 18, the Apostle Paul says, "For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory which shall be revealed in us." And what's so interesting about that verse is that he didn't run away from the pain. Instead of running away from the pain or turning to something to dull the pain, he just, like, I mean, honestly, you know, my pain, when I have pain, I focus on that pain and I complain about the pain.
Right.
That's me. But it's interesting because Apostle Paul didn't do that. He talks about instead of setting his eyes upon the pain, he set his eyes upon the glory that shall be revealed in us. He set his eyes upon heaven and Christ. And that, in a sense, began to make the pain dull away.
And I think when we realize this life is short and that, you know, pain just says you're alive, because we will go through painful things in life. And just as Apostle Paul endured through his pain, knowing that one day he would meet Jesus Christ and it would all be worth it. Let's hear from Millie Radosti after the break.
Real Life is made possible by people like you. We'd like to take this opportunity to sincerely thank you for your generous support. We couldn't do it without you. May God bless.
Welcome back to Real Life. I'm your host, Kathleen Lay, and joining me is my husband, Evangelist Ann Lay.
Hello, everyone.
Joining us is Millie Joy Radosti, and she's going to be sharing with us how she struggled with severe depression and a lot of other mental illnesses. The first time that she wanted to commit suicide was 7 years old, and we're going to find out how she attempted suicide and survived and how her life has completely changed, and I believe you're going to find hope for yourself or a loved one. Let's welcome to the show, Millie. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Tell me a little bit about, you were a young girl and you started to be abused. Tell me what that felt like inside and the torture that you were dealing with.
I felt always from a young age like I was a problem, and I didn't know how to deal with feeling like I was a problem, and I felt pain inside and I couldn't put that tangibly into words. I remember thinking that if I just wasn't living, I wouldn't feel this pain. And in my young mind, that's the simplest equation I could come up with. So I remember feeling like if I wasn't living, this pain would be gone. I remember thinking that the only thing that's making me alive right now is my breath. And so I remember just as young as 7 years old thinking, if I hold my breath, I won't live, and then this pain will be gone. And I remember just sitting in my bed trying to hold my breath as long as I could so that my life would no longer continue. And I would usually just pass out crying and go to sleep or something like that. But it all started very young for me like that.
Gosh, that is so sad to think about a little seven-year-old going through that. And it continued for you. In fact, at 13 years old, you felt numb. You're a teenager, but the abuse continued and you just felt like you had no emotions, no feelings, and you started to do something called cutting. We've all heard of it, where you started to cut yourself to feel again. Can you tell me about that?
Yeah, I remember finding a razor, and it was like this knowledge I don't remember seeing it anywhere. Like, I had seen scary movies and different things, but I don't remember ever seeing someone actually injure themselves. But when I had this razor in my hand, like, just this knowledge came that I could hurt myself. Mm. And the first time I did it, I remember thinking, wow, this is pain. This is pain that I control for the first time, instead of all this pain I felt inside that I couldn't control. Mm. And, you know, it was a mixture of like pain and numbness. And I remember feeling like it was such a strong, powerful, sharp feeling that like I could control.
Mm.
And that it was very gruesome, very dark place.
Yeah.
It was just like another world for me, very unhealthy.
Mm. And so as you started cutting yourself and you felt something, you felt a little bit more empowered, right? Like you were in control of something of your life.
Yes, in one sense. And in another sense, I felt like I was in such a dark bondage. That was the only kind of feeling I could have.
Oh, gosh. You know, a lot of people have struggled with cutting themselves, and people may say, why would someone do that? But it makes so much sense that you just want to feel you've been numb, things have hurt, and people go through this. And so as time went on, you started to get diagnosed with different things and ended up taking different types of medications. Can you tell us about that?
Yes, I started self-injuring around the age of 13 and became completely obsessed with death and suicide around those ages. And I feel like, you know, I was developing these feelings all through my childhood. But when I came to the ages of like 13 and 14, I became more aware that I could do something about it.
Mm.
And that, like, what am I going to do about it? And it put me on this fork in the road between, you know, was I just going to let it overcome me and become a shell, or was I going to become powerful in some way? And I felt like the only way I could become powerful was through self-injury and having this secret world where I at least felt something and where I had my own secrets kind of thing. And I remember this like progressing until the age of 14, where I did have an encounter with Jesus, but I still was living in the abuse at home and the atmosphere and just not healed. I hadn't walked through my healing yet, hadn't received it, and I didn't really know how to. And so things progressively got worse with the self-injury and everything until the age of 19, when I reached out for help to someone.
Right. Well, let me ask you this. At 14 years old, you were invited to go to church. You go to church, and at that time, you said you had an experience with Jesus.
Right.
You received him into your heart. Was there a feeling you felt, or something that you knew he was real at that time, or was it just this peace you felt?
Well, I try not to cry when I talk about this, but it was like the first time I ever felt, I felt this warmth, and it was like I knew, like the same way I somehow knew that I could injure myself with the razor, I knew that the warmth I was feeling at that moment was the love of a father.
Mm.
And I remember thinking, this is what this is like.
Mm.
And then I didn't have like words for it. I just kind of knew this. And then the pastor gives an altar call at the front and saying, this is the love of God. This is the love of Jesus. Do you want to accept him? And, you know, I couldn't run up to the altar fast enough, really. And I just remember feeling that for the first time and just being like, I'm abandoned to this. You know, I didn't feel worthy or anything, but I knew that he was real. And I knew that he was there with me and that there was a father that loved me.
Wow. Mm. And that is so touching in my heart, because to know the love of God and that peace. But what was really hard for you is you had to go back and live in your situation. So although you got this newness of love in your heart, you went back home to the abuse. And so your circumstance didn't change, although your heart was changed. So it was pretty confusing, I'd say. And through that, you were actually dealing with a few different things, like borderline personality disorder. And then a doctor said you had bipolar and depression and, of course, psychotic episodes. Can you tell me how that started to blow up?
Yeah. Well, I became super codependent on a leader in my life. And I don't think the leader or I realized the depths of brokenness I had reached. And, you know, this person became like Jesus to me, to the point where I was codependent completely, to the point where I didn't think I could live without this person. And they ended up reaching out to, you know, the local authorities and taking me in. And that's when I got admitted to my first mental health institution. And the first time I walked in, I remember all the protocols and the blood checks and everything. They were, you know, examining everything about me. I remember walking through the hall thinking about all Hollywood portrayed about mental health and mental illness and thinking, I'm actually crazy now. There's no way to come back from this. I'll never be normal again, no matter how I try to hide it. It's in my records. I'm crazy, and I'll never just be a normal person again. I'll never lead a normal life. Wow. And from there, they started to, you know, examine me. The first day at a mental health institution is 3 to 5 days. My first day was 2 months.
Wow. You know, there are people listening right now who feel like they're crazy. There's something wrong with them. Mm-hmm. They have been through abuse like you or very traumatic situations, and they can't feel right now. And we want to pray for those people. And on our next show, you're going to talk a little bit more about the freedom that you received, how you got it, and how other people can also receive that freedom, because we believe we have a powerful God that can help set people free. And so we're going to pray for those who are suffering right now and struggling, letting them know that there is hope, because I'm talking to you now on the other side of this, and you have been set free, but I don't want to give it away. We're going to have you back on our next show. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
You know, it is a very scary thing to feel out of control of your life when abuse is happening, things are happening to you, and you're stuck. You just feel stuck, especially for younger people. And many of us have gone through that. Or maybe there's someone who's listening right now and saying, I'm going through that right now. Know this, that God has the power to heal your life and bring such utter healing that will change your life. You know, it's so easy to get so numb that we want to feel pain or have control over something.
Yeah.
Here's something you can have control over, is that Jesus died on the cross so that you could have your life back, and so you can be saved from the inside out. So Jesus, we call upon your name. Mm-hmm. We ask for you, Lord. We give you our out of control life. Mm-hmm. We ask for your presence to come into our life and bring freedom, hope, and love, and wholeness. Mm-hmm. In Jesus' mighty name.
Amen. And if you need prayer, we want to hear from you. Give us a call. Our number is 877-480-4477. Again, 877-480-4477. God bless you all. Thanks for tuning in. You're listening to Real Life.